This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The 2018 League of Legends Summer Split is over, and joining me to break down what went wrong for certain teams and to speak about Patch 8.18 is Envin Global Esports Analyst James Hong. Thanks for joining me, James.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I was watching the last few games of the Summer Split, but could you break down for me the TSM versus 100 Thieves? I thought for sure 100 Thieves was going to win. What do you think happened there?
This is actually a very interesting match. I enjoyed watching it. I hope you did too. There are, you know, reasons on both sides why TSM came on top after such a solid performance from 100 Thieves. So first reason being is, you know, Cody Sun, right? I'm not necessarily saying Cody Sun played bad throughout the whole series, but in the beginning, Cody Sun played extremely well and, you know, played more or less risk-oriented during games 1 and 2. While the rest of 100 Thieves did also play well as well, especially Afamu and Alistar, he was insanely good. But after the second game, Cody Sun was put into multiple team comps where the team solely relied on him for the teamfight damage and the teamfight win. And what this meant was, you know, Cody Sun was put on Tristana and he kept unfortunately making mistakes and taking risks he didn't really need to take in high-pressure situations. So these mistakes eventually stockpiled to the result we eventually saw where, you know, TSM took games 3, 4, and 5 in a row. An example for this would be, I believe, one moment Cody would jump in just to kill Sire when he knows Camille still has his ultimate up, which means he's essentially trading a tank on TSM's side for the only damage dealer on your side, which is never, ever a good idea, right? And the second reason being is Bjergsen. Bjergsen just played insanely well, and he was just the core backbone for his team with his Zillion pick, always getting those crucial revives, always trying to think of, you know, very ingenious ways to make use of his double bombs, like he did with the Sion zombie corpse when Sion died and hit his passive so he can, you know, make extra damage that way. So Bjergsen played really well, and unfortunately, Cody Sun did not perform as well as he could have for his teams in the later games of the stage. So that's kind of the reasons why TSM really made that miracle run and pulled through after such a solid start from 100 Thieves.
Now, I can't help but feel that too many times people are relying on one specific person to kind of hard carry them through the match, especially with TSM. Bjergsen, you already said, man, he played so well. But what can the rest of the team do so that the whole win doesn't fall on one person, like in this case, Bjergsen?
I think it really depends on the meta and the draft as well. So if you think about all the drafts that went into the games against 100 Thieves, they were, you know, oriented with Hunter in the top lane going for either tank or engage champion, so it's really hard for him to really be in the spotlight, I would say. I would say even if Hunter did perform really well and did carry for his team, he would look less eye-catching than would a Zillion mid or something that Bjergsen would play mid. That's more, I guess, more flashy, right? So that in that aspect, you know, Bjergsen did do well in those games, no lie. But Hunter did do well, and it may not seem he's getting the credit that he may deserve or that the champions can't, you know, shine as bright as what Bjergsen plays, right? And the other thing I would really want to discuss is, you know, Ben was majority put on Kai'Sa for his pick, and Kai'Sa is an ADC, as you know, and as an ADC in this meta with previous patches going on right now, they hit later, as in their damage spikes, their power spikes, their ability to shine in team fights is really delayed to maybe, you know, 20, 25, 30, even 35 minutes. And up to that point, you know, all you really want to see in the game is your mid laner and jungler really pulling your team through, pulling those, you know, early game team fights, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really hard on both, you know, top and other roles such as ADC, which is mostly seen as, you know, the carry lane, the lane that's going to really pop off for your team when, you know, things like patches, things like picks, things like drafts, things like meta, is really holding them back, right? And Bjergsen is doing a really good job really helping his team kind of rise through those difficulties by picking, you know, a champion such as Zilean, right? Zilean really helps with very immobile but yet sticky tank champions, like, in the top lane. And they help soft, squishy ADCs like Kaiser to really get to the mid-game with those speed boosts, with those flows, with those revivals on the ultimate. So it's really, I guess, up to TSM to create even more, you know, flexible drafts with maybe sometimes a damage delay in the top lane and maybe something much more safer and much more consistent like Ezreal or Tristana in the bot lane. You know, they could flex the drafts up like this just to make them less reliant on piercing. Or it could just be later on in, when the meta changes, you know, they could all have sort of a carry potential within them. But right now, as of, you know, the meta, the pick, and the draft and everything else, I think TSM is just, like, very naturally relying on Bjergsen right now.
Now, another match that I was really disappointed in, well, the outcome, you know, congratulations to Team Liquid for winning, but I'm not going to lie, I was kind of rooting for Cloud9. I really wanted to see Cloud9 win, and they were just decimated. Yeah. It was horrible. Where do you think they went wrong, Cloud9?
Well, first of all, before I say anything, I was also rooting for Cloud9 because I wanted them to make that, you know, the miracle run of going last place in the ladder to all the way to, you know, first and winning the summer finals. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And just to go into some of the reasons why Team Liquid came out on top and why Cloud9 lost was just because of macro and double it. So by this, I mean all three games, Team Liquid showed just how good they are in controlling side lane, shot calling, just anything macro-oriented about the game that Cloud9 just couldn't do. Not because I'm saying Cloud9 played bad or in any way. Cloud9 played really well. It's just that Team Liquid was just better, right? Both teams are really good in, you know, BO3s, BO5s, by those I mean best of fives, best of threes. But then, you know, Team Liquid just had excellent drafts, excellent macro calls, excellent team synergy as well that just Cloud9 couldn't follow. And on top of all this, Doublelift, I believe, outperformed Sneaky. Like, Doublelift, they should not give Doublelift Kai'Sa. Kai'Sa with Doublelift combined is just so disgusting when they go into late game. Like, Doublelift is insane on Kai'Sa. And I feel like during the draft, they try to compensate giving Doublelift Kai'Sa by, you know, picking another hyper carry in the bot lane. Like, you know, they get Twitch. And I feel like they could have also picked someone like Tristana as well. She's a good pick as well. But then the thing is, Kai'Sa is just so much stronger than any other ADC right now. It doesn't really compare. I mean, put that on top with a very, very skilled ADC player, then, you know, you're setting yourself up to defeat, right? And the other thing that really played a crucial part, I feel like, was some of the jungle picks actually coming out for Cloud9. Like, for example, when they subbed in Spence Garen and Spence Garen picked Lee Sin. Now, I think Lee Sin is a very good champion and a very good pick, but it's really hard to pull off in competitive play just because Lee Sin is only good in solo queue just because you can rely on other people's mistakes, right? Lee Sin is very good at dodging through vision, dodging through people's very, I guess, lack of a better word, not a perfect, you know, efficiency in movement and team fights. You know, you can catch them out with a quick QW into a kick for your team as well. So those are kind of the reasons why Lee Sin is so good as a champion and so good in solo queue, but not so much in competitive play, just because pro players in a competitive environment really don't make that many mistakes. And even if they do, they have reliable teammates that can back them up for them. And granted, you know, Spence Garrett made a really, really nice Lee Sin kick on Doublelift, but that was pretty much the only highlight for his play. Other than that, he was, you know, he would only get CC'd until he died. He was not that useful in team fights. And there was no mistakes to really take advantage of because Team Liquid really, you know, didn't make any mistakes that could be taken advantage. So those are kind of the reasons why Team Liquid kind of gained the edge and really went 3-0 on this one.
When it comes to Cloud9, just so everybody else can know, why is it that they were allowed 7 people on their roster? I mean, is that normal for League of Legends?
Usually, the max subs you can have on a team is 2. And it's very typical for, I guess, high-caliber or high-level professional teams to have 7 members. As I said before, you know, the draft, the pick, you know, everything is constantly changing throughout patches and throughout inside tournaments itself as well. In order to combat this to the best efficiency, you would have players that would have different, you know, specific traits, as in, let's say, an aggressive player that plays really well with these champions if they're not banned, or a controller jungler that is safe and consistent. Like, you want multiple, I guess, avenues of victory for your team. And in order to do that the best way, a player cannot, you know, a team cannot expect a player to be top-notch on every single style of play, every single champion in the game, right? Not that ideal. So you have all these players, I mean, that could sub in for different patches or different metas, different picks, or against different teams even. So it is very natural to have seven players on your team in order to, I guess, be the most flexible, be the most, you know, best well-rounded team in your region, or, you know, even in the world. So teams like RNG, SKT, and a lot of other high-tier teams do have two supports and do go to tournaments with, you know, the seven-man roster.
Now, when it comes to those extra players on C9, do you think, because I think that it actually ruined the synergy of C9, because you're right about Team Liquid. Team Liquid was just, they were a cohesive unit. They sat there and knew exactly where everybody was going to be at. Whereas Cloud9, it kind of felt that this was solo queue. Nobody knew where anybody was going. Do you think those two extra people kind of messed up the synergy?
Yeah, I actually agree with you, because as I said before, it is one of the better options for a team to have multiple players on their roster, just because of, you know, the flexibility and being a better, well-rounded team. But obviously the downside of that is you need a lot of time to implement your other players with the new players that are coming in, or, you know, some of the other players that are coming out. By that I mean that, you know, when you have two players that are rotating mid and jungle between, you know, games or sets or practice or whatnot, it's really hard for the other people or the other teammates to really, you know, create that solid synergy that you really need to pull through those tough wins in those set matches. And I believe, you know, Reaper, the head coach for Cloud9, made a very, very wise choice in getting the seven-man roster. But I think they just needed more time, honestly speaking. If they had, let's just say, a month or 2 months more of time, who knows what the result might be. But Cloud9 did not have that much time, as they did do the roster changes throughout the midst of the summer split. It was really, I feel like, difficult for them to really create that solid synergy like TL had in the finals. So, yeah, I'm sad, but I have to agree with you.
When it comes to Sneaky and Zazel, why did it take them to game three to finally change up? Because I don't think that Sneaky was playing Twitch as well as he should have. He could have roamed a little bit going to mid lane, at least to spook out TL's mid laner, but he kind of did nothing. And even though he won the lane early, I don't think that he did enough to really snowball the Twitch character the way it's designed to be. So with that being said, why not, you know, if he knew he couldn't play that an assassin Twitch like he could have, why did he take to game three? Shouldn't he have changed at game two going to Ezreal?
A lot of things that really contribute to Sneaky's Twitch not being as high as everyone expected or, you know, should be. Just the first part being Team Liquid is a very organized and very, you know, high caliber team. But, I mean, they know exactly what Twitch wants to do, aka, you know, as you said before, roam mid and try to be that assassin or try to get his early game lead somewhere else so they can start snowballing. But Team Liquid already knows what Twitch wants to do, right? Early game lead, roam, avoid vision, you know, really snowball for the team as well and be a nuisance in teamfights. So in order to combat that, Team Liquid, I'm assuming that they had very nice calls saying, you know, Twitch is near, play safe. And they also had a lot of vision around the river as well to avoid getting ganked by Sneaky. So it wasn't necessarily of Sneaky just deciding not to roam. I believe it's partly as Sneaky saying, oh yeah, I want to roam, but then TL's team is already aware, so they rotate out or they rotate somewhere out, right? The other pick about Sneaky being, you know, game one and game two with Twitch is just because they needed something to combat Doublelift's Kai'Sa, right? Kai'Sa is just so, so strong in the late game, and in team fights, it's almost impossible to kill her unless you get the initiative on her and CC chain her that way, right? And in order to combat her very incredible late game team fighting, is to pick someone who's also equally incredible at late game teamfights, right? Which is Twitch, just because it is ultimate and it's crisp and it's scaling as well. But it's just that Twitch, unlike another hyper carrier like Tristana, who has that reliable doubly reset and jump and escape as well. Twitch doesn't really have all that, except for its Q, but it's very unreliable, as if you're damaged, your stealth is delayed, and you essentially just die, right? And for Team Liquid's side, they have picks like Sion, and they have picks like, you know, Ryze that can really essentially just make Sneaky not useful in team fights. You know, all Sion has to do is just flash Q, or flash E, or even flash R, and then Sneaky can move for 1 to 2 seconds, and in team fights, that 1 or 2 seconds is the difference between you dealing, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 damage or nothing at all. So that really played a part as well. And considering Vagal's pick on Braum, they only took it because of Always, right? Always Braum is incredible. And on top of that, if they had Braum and Kaiser, I don't think they could win bot lane. But that's pretty much why Sneaky really wanted to play Twitch for games 1 and 2, and that's why Vagal really wanted to play Braum as well for game 1 and 2. And obviously game 2, they realized this was not going to work, and that's why they kind of shifted up that way and picked Ezreal.
Well, it was a good fight regardless, and Team Liquid, they won. Congratulations to them. When can we expect the League of Legends World Championship to start?
The League of Legends World Championship for this year will start at October 1st, and it'll go all the way up to the finals, which will be held in November 3rd.
Do you know what teams are going to be competing there?
So, in total, there's going to be 24 teams competing, so there are a lot of teams. And some of the teams actually have not been finalized yet, such as for the LCK, which is the Korean League. The third place is still in contention, so the games will be held this week, I believe. Some of the teams are not finalized yet, but the other teams are, you know, as you guys know, RNG, I believe, a Freak of Freak from the Korean side, and a lot of other teams, and TL is going for sure as well. And there's just a bunch of teams from, you know, Turkey, Vietnam, Korea, NA, EU. So there's just a lot of teams going, and I'm excited to see how all these different teams really clash against each other.
Do you think any of the North American teams are going to do well, or is it going to be like, we might as well just give it to Faker?
That's a good question. I am rooting for NA teams for sure, but I would say it's very difficult to say this year just because of, well, there is this saying of how the gap between Korean or Chinese teams regarding to the rest of the world is closing, and it really is. And NA has improved so much this year by seeing, you know, TL's performance, Cloud9's performance, TSM's performance as well. They're all doing really well. But I'm just afraid of the Chinese teams this year just because the Chinese teams are by far times better than the Korean teams right now. And the Korean teams are by no means, you know, bad in any way. So I believe NA will actually do relatively well against other regions, but when it comes to China and Korea, I'm afraid I have to favor towards the Asian one over here.
I can't help but to think that, you know, the Koreans, I love watching them play, and my favorite mid laner will always be Faker. He's the GOAT of League of Legends, the greatest of all time, in my opinion. And I'll always root for him. But, you know, I live in North America, so I have to root for my North American teams.
Yeah.
So this upcoming patch, I got to know, what kind of buffs, changes, and nerfs, which ones stick out the most for you, this patch?
So some of the changes that really stood out to me, first of all, was the Aatrox buff. So Aatrox is still really, really, really good. It's still played a lot in solo queue, and he has actually a pretty decent win rate, too. And one of the reasons why Aatrox is so good is because of his sustain and his ultimate. And those two are exactly the buffs that he's receiving this patch. So what's happening with his E, Humble Dash, is pretty much the his E's passive explains that every damage his skills do, he heals off a certain percentage, right? So this exact heal is getting buffed from 20 to 25%, which was what the ratio was before, but now it's going from 20 to 30%. So it's a solid 5% increase in healing, which may not seem that big too much, but if you think about, you know, Aatrox having 3 versions of his Q, and he has his W, plus he has his empowered auto attack, those, every time it hits, getting 30% off a heal is insane in early game laning phase, right? It is also, you know, strong in late game, but more so early game, just because of Aatrox's sustain is what makes him such a lane bully and such a menace in the game. And on top of this, his ultimate AD ratio is getting buffed from 20 to 25 to 20 to 30% as well. So this just creates, you know, a better laning phase, better early game and mid game transition for Aatrox, which he didn't really need. And I'll just have to see how this really affects the game after the patch hits. But I believe, you know, he's not going to be over the top overpowered, but he's definitely going to be in that tier one spot right there. So I'm excited to see how those changes go. The other changes that really shocked me actually was the Brom and Narner. So Brom is good just because of his passive essentially and his E, right? His E being the shield that blocks projectiles and his passive being every forward hit, the target is stunned. And they decreased his health a lot, actually, his base health. So originally his health used to be 576, but now they decreased it to 36 to 540. So what this means is that Brom can go for a very aggressive, you know, early game invade and very aggressive early game trade. Just because that 36 health may not seem that significant, but, you know, that's two auto attacks right there. And in, you know, early game team fights, it really comes down to two or three auto attacks when it comes to who gets first blood or who has to burn their slash or things like that. So it's, I don't think it's necessarily a good change, but we'll just have to see. Brom might still be picked regardless of the change just because of, as I said before, his E is so strong and his passive is so strong. So maybe they'll just pick him and play more safe in the early game and really ramped it up in the mid to late game, so we just have to see. But and the second change is to Gnar. So Gnar's mini is already very weak, I would say, because of he gets decreased health and decreased stats when he's using mini Gnar. But they decrease his armor even further from 30 to 28. So it's going to be really hard for Gnar to lane against champions such as, you know, I really want to get into his face as mini Gnar, such as Jax, Neil, Akali, all the champions like that. So I don't know why they made this change, because Gnar is very oppressive and poke-oriented when he's in mini Gnar, but there are ways to get to him, there are ways to gain. You know, he doesn't have that good of an escape. A trade-off between him being big Gnar and him being mini Gnar, right? So I disagree with this change, and hopefully they'll do something about this, just because I think this will make Gnar too weak when it comes to level 1 to almost even level 2, like 8, 9-ish. And we'll just have to see about those changes. And the other change that I want to talk about last is the Tundra. So what happened was his pillar of ice, which is his E, got two changes. First off is the cooldown, which got increased, but it's only increased by 2 seconds each round, so it's not that much of a difference, as you're not really looking to get two pillars off in a teamfight. You're only looking to get one pillar off to make that cap and to rotate to an objective, things like that. And that's why Tundra is so good level 2, level 3 game as well. But the most important part is that his E slang got changed. So usually you knock E first on Tundra and then W, and then the E is also maxed last, or, you know, in some French cases, maxed second. And what they did was in rank 1, the slow change went from 30% to 15%. So this is an incredible, like, massive change right here. And it'll probably change how much Tundra is picked, actually, just because in solo queue, Tundra already has one of the lowest pick-to-win ratios in the jungle criteria, and Tundra is necessarily only good in competitive play because you can work around with your teammates, but this isn't so much so in solo queue. So seeing this change, I really don't think we'll ever see Tundra ever again in solo queue, just because his E won't be as effective in level 2 or level 3 games anymore. And that's essentially why people picked him most of the time, to get that early game, you know, counter jungle, that early game gank, that early game pressure, that early game snowball. And with the 15% change, it's just immensely devastating for Tundra, on top of the cooldown increase. So I guess from this past, I would just summarize that Tundra unfortunately won't be seen that much, even though he has the lowest win rate as well. And Brom got nerfed, Gnar got nerfed. So we'll just have to see how this early game really shifts on to the next patch.
Now, when I was looking at the patch notes, I couldn't help but to see how they were changing champions, whether it was a nerf, buff, change, and it was really applied for the early game, like specifically early game. And I remember a few months ago, a Riot employee, I forgot who, said that they wanted to design the games to be a little bit faster. Do you think they're making these changes so that the games could be faster, like maybe a 20-minute or a 25-minute game, without allowing champions to snowball, and that's why they're making these types of changes?
I actually read that too about Riot employee. Unfortunately, I don't remember his or her name as well. But I believe Riot is still trying to reinforce how they want faster games. But Riot has mentioned this before, where they said they need to tackle some of the snowball issues in certain champions, right? So having a fast game doesn't mean that you need very oppressive snowballs in certain champions. As I said before, although I don't agree with the Chundo move, Chundo was very snowball heavy just because he could, you know, get a kill or get a gank off at level 2 and level 3. While some champions are unable to gank until level 3 and onwards, right? So Chundo really had that snowball, I guess, edge against other champions, and this is why they're trying to slow down or kind of even out everyone's snowball potential in order to make the game more fair, right? But in that aspect, it also doesn't make sense. Some champions are supposed to be more snowball-oriented, while other champions are good in, you know, something else. That's like the purpose of having a champion, right? They have unique traits, unique strengths, and weaknesses. But if they're going to make every champion, I guess, snowball potential more rounded off, it really ruins the purpose of actually picking this certain champion over another one, right? So it's kind of a dilemma there. And I believe Riot is still trying to go for how they want to speed up, as I said earlier. They just want to, I guess, you know, balance things out.
Now for the fun part. Character spotlight. Trundle. And I have to know, is Trundle a bruiser or is Trundle a tank? Is he a fighter? What kind of champion is he supposed to be?
He's all the things that you just mentioned. He's a bruiser, he's a tank, and he is a fighter.
Man, he's an all-in-one type of champion. So is that what makes Trundle unique? What kind of way is Trundle a unique kind of champion? Is he supposed to be an assassin where he jumps out from the bush and then chomps on you? Or is he supposed to just come full at you? You get what I mean? Like, how are you supposed to play him properly?
What makes Trundle so, so unique in the whole game of League of Legends is he's actually the only champion that will increase his own effectiveness while decreasing some champion else's effectiveness. By that, I mean, it's his Q and his ultimate. So his Q, when he chomps someone, he steals the AD from them. AD as an attack damage. So essentially, you know, if you have an AD carry hitting you for 120 damage per hit and you chomp them, then, you know, you take 20 damage away from every auto and then you gain that 20 AD. So you get more effective while they get, you know, I guess, more subjugated. And talking about subjugate, his ultimate is called subjugate. And what he does is he steals health and armor and magic resist from the target that he targeted and gains it himself. So what this means is that he's extremely good at oppressing and extremely good against tank champions. So what makes, you know, to answer your question really about what makes Trundle unique is that Trundle is only high-pick and good when tanks are in the meta. Whenever, you know, you have the tank top lane, the tank jungle, and a tank support, Trundle always comes back into the meta and is always good. When tanks rotate out of the meta and you see more assassins in the top lane, in the jungle, etc., etc., you see Trundle less often just because his ultimate and his Q is less effective just because it steals, you know, resistances from the enemy. And if you don't have any resistance to necessarily steal in the beginning with Trundle, you know, there's no reason to pick Trundle. So that's essentially why Trundle is so unique, just because he's only good when a certain type of champions are good. So it's kind of like the ultimate counterpicks of counterpicks, I would say.
Oh, wow. So how do you counter Trundle then? Do you just go AP characters?
You can counter Trundle just having a lot of CC on your team.
Oh, okay.
So one of the difficulties Trundle has is really gap closing to, you know, range champions and whatnot, but that's why he has his E. But as long as the team plays around his pillar of ice and slows or stuns or knocks up or whatnot regarding to CC, you're fine against Trundle. As you can see, you know, in competitive play replays or, you know, when you see a really tanky Trundle die, just because he gets knocked up, done, CC'd, he can't move, and although he's, you know, a bruiser or a tank or whatnot, he still, you know, is not immune to damage. So as long as you can CC him correctly, you can counter Trundle.
Now, I know that a lot of times the only place you see Trundle, in pro play at least, is in jungle. But I do solo queue a lot, and I see Trundle everywhere. I see Trundle in top lane. I see Trundle in jungle and as support. Do you think that those are good, taking Trundle to top or as support?
I think the best role is probably jungle, but I think the second one, you know, I said earlier when I said Trundle's level 2 and level 3 is so strong, you really want to have that power level be affected in other lanes, right? And what better place to do it than in the jungle? And also his passive, which states that he heals a percentage of his health off, you know, minions that die or champions that die around him. So jungle is, you know, perfect as he gets really nice sustain His cue steals AD from the jungle camp as well, so he clears really, really well. And when he hits level 2 or level 3, his pillar makes it so easy for the opponent to have to burn flash or even get a kill. You can see in his top lane, just because top lane is, like bot lane, one of the longest lanes in the game, right? So when you essentially have an enemy laner that's pushed up against you, and either your jungler comes or you know you can win that 1v1 duel, they can't escape just because your Q slows, your W gives you movement speed, and your E slows and creates a terrain that they have to walk around on. So, you know, it makes Trundle very effective in 1v1, very effective in 2v2, and that's why the best roles for Trundle is jungle and top lane.
When it comes to runes, what's the best rune spec?
So the best runes by far for Trundle is Pressy Attack, just because of his Q is an auto attack set, so you can get those three procs for your Pressy Attack really fast. It's just an auto Q and then auto. Then you have everything set up, and you have your W and you have your E to really help you stick onto the target, so it just helps your overall damage, and you don't really need any help with, I guess, the resolve tree, just because Trundle is naturally a very tanky champion.
Now, as for weapons, if you're going to go top lane, what should be your first weapon you should build with a Trundle?
The first item that you should really go for is Tiamat. Now, Trundle has very nice single target damage, but he has, you know, difficulties in clearing waves and pushing in. And also, it helps with his auto attack reset, right? So Tiamat is a very nice fit for Trundle, and it also builds into Ravenous Hydra, which is what you want to build on Trundle as well. So it's, you know, killing two birds with one stone kind of thing. So you always want to go Tiamat first, then you want to get Ravenous Hydra, and depending on what, you know, team comps they have, you can go Ninja Tabi or Mercury Tread. And then after that, you always want to go against Frozen Heart and Spirit Facade. Once you have those three items, you can win any duel against any champion 1v1, and you'll be incredibly effective in teamfights, as Spirit Visage gives you that 20% increased self-healing, which Trundle has with his passive and with his ultimate. And it also gives him cooldown reduction, you know, magic resist, which he needs. And Frozen Heart also gives him that cooldown reduction and armor that he needs. And the reason why this build all comes together is because you get natural sustain from your kit with Trundle, and then Ravenous Hydra gives you life steal, which also synergizes with Spirit Visage, and then all the cooldown reduction combined will give him 40%, and Trundle just loves cooldown reduction just because of his pillar and his Q spam. So that's essentially what the build you want to go for him when you go top lane.
Well, James, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
First off, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about League of Legends here. And if you guys want to know more about me or more about, you know, League of Legends and the upcoming world, please feel free to check out InventGlobal.com. Yeah, it's the best esports news you can ever find. And we'll be covering, you know, the world championships in both American perspective and the international and Korean perspective. So make sure you guys check that out.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.